That'd be great. Yeah, I think I'll go and tell her I like the clean sweep, just so she knows.
He dashed from the room, leaving Harry and Hermione alone. For some reason, Harry found that he did not want to look at Hermione. He turned to his bed, picked up the pile of clean robes Mrs. Weasley had laid upon it, and crossed the room to his trunk.
"Harry," said Hermione tentatively.
"Well done," said Harry, so heartily it did not sound like his voice at all, and still not looking at her.
"Brilliant! Prefect! Great!"
"Thanks," said Hermione.
"Harry, could I borrow Hedwig so I can tell Mum and Dad? They'll be really pleased. I mean, prefect is something they can understand."
"Yeah, no problem," said Harry, still in the horrible, hearty voice that did not belong to him.
"Take her!"
He leaned over his trunk, laid the robes on the bottom of it, and pretended to be rummaging for something while Hermione crossed to the wardrobe and called Hedwig down. A few moments passed. Harry heard the door close but remained bent double, listening. The only sounds he could hear were the blank picture on the wall sniggering again, and the waste paper basket in the corner coughing up the owl droppings. He straightened up and looked behind him. Hermione and Hedwig had gone. Harry hurried across the room, closed the door, then returned slowly to his bed and sank onto it, gazing unseeingly at the foot of the wardrobe. He had forgotten completely about prefects being chosen in the fifth year. He had been too anxious about the possibility of being expelled to spare a thought for the fact that badges must be winging their way towards certain people. But if he had remembered, if he had thought about it, what would he have expected?
"Not this," said a small and truthful voice inside his head.
Harry screwed up his face and buried it in his hands. He could not lie to himself. If he had known the prefect badge was on its way, he would have expected it to come to him, not Ron. Did this make him as arrogant as Draco Malfoy? Did he think himself superior to everyone else? Did he really believe he was better than Ron?
"No," said the small voice defiantly.
Was that true? Harry wondered, anxiously probing his own feelings.
"I'm better at Quidditch," said the voice. "But I'm not better at anything else."
That was definitely true, Harry thought. He was no better than Ron in lessons, but what about outside lessons? What about those adventures he, Ron, and Hermione had had together since they had started at Hogwarts, often risking much worse than expulsion?
"Well, Ron and Hermione were with me most of the time," said the voice in Harry's head.
"Not all the time, though," Harry argued with himself.
"They didn't fight Quirrell with me. They didn't take on Riddle and the Basilisk. They didn't get rid of all those Dementors the night Sirius escaped. They weren't in that graveyard with me the night Voldemort returned."
And the same feeling of ill-usage that had overwhelmed him on the night he had arrived rose again.
"I've definitely done more," Harry thought indignantly. "I've done more than either of them. But maybe," said the small voice fairly, "maybe Dumbledore doesn't choose prefects because they've got themselves into a load of dangerous situations. Maybe he chooses them for other reasons. Ron must have something you don't."
Harry opened his eyes and stared through his fingers at the wardrobe's clawed feet, remembering what Fred had said.
"No one in their right mind would make Ron a prefect."
Harry gave a small snort of laughter. A second later, he felt sickened with himself. Ron had not asked Dumbledore to give him the prefect badge. This was not Ron's fault. Was he, Harry, Ron's best friend in the world, going to sulk because he didn't have a badge, laugh with the twins behind Ron's back, ruin this for Ron when, for the first time, he had beaten Harry at something? At this point, Harry heard Ron's footsteps on the stairs again. He stood up, straightened his glasses, and hitched a grin onto his face as Ron bounded back through the door.
"Just caught her," he said happily. "She says she'll get the clean sweep if she can."
"Cool," Harry said, and he was relieved to hear that his voice had stopped sounding hearty.
"Listen, Ron, well done, mate."
The smile faded off Ron's face.
"I never thought it would be me," he said, shaking his head. "I thought it would be you." "Nah, I've caused too much trouble," Harry said, echoing Fred.
"Yeah," said Ron.
"Yeah, I suppose. Well, we better get our trunks packed, hadn't we?"
It was odd how widely their possessions seemed to have scattered themselves since they had arrived. It took them most of the afternoon to retrieve their books and belongings from all over the house and stow them back inside their school trunks. Harry noticed that Ron kept moving his prefect's badge around, first placing it on his bedside table, then putting it into his jeans pocket, then taking it out and laying it on his folded robes as though to see the effect of the red on the black. Only when Fred and George dropped in and offered to attach it to his forehead with a permanent sticking charm did he wrap it tenderly in his maroon socks and lock it in his trunk. Mrs. Weasley returned from Diagon Alley around 6 o'clock, laden with books and carrying a long package wrapped in thick brown paper that Ron took from her with a moan of longing.
"Never mind unwrapping it now. People are arriving for dinner. I want you all downstairs," she said.
For the moment she was out of sight, Ron ripped off the paper in a frenzy and examined every inch of his new broom, an ecstatic expression on his face. Down in the basement, Mrs. Weasley had hung a scarlet banner over the heavily laden dinner table, which read, "Congratulations, Ron and Hermione, new prefects." She looked in a better mood than Harry had seen her all holiday.
"I thought we'd have a little party, not a sit-down dinner," she told Harry, Ron, Hermione, Fred, George and Ginny as they entered the room. "Your father and Bill are on their way, Ron. I've sent them both owls, and they're thrilled," she added, beaming.
Fred rolled his eyes. Sirius, Lupin, Tonks and Kingsley Shacklebolt were already there, and Mad-Eye Moody stumped in shortly after Harry had got himself a butterbeer.
"Oh, Alastor, I'm glad you're here," said Mrs. Weasley brightly, as Mad-Eye shrugged off his travelling cloak. "We've been wanting to ask you for ages. Could you have a look in the writing desk in the drawing room and tell us what's inside it? We haven't wanted to open it just in case it's something really nasty."
"No problem, Molly."
Moody's electric blue eyes swiveled upward and stared fixedly through the ceiling of the kitchen.
"Drawing room," he growled as the pupil contracted. "Desk in the corner. Yeah, I see it. Yeah, it's a boggart. Want me to go up and get rid of it, Molly?"
"No, no, I'll do it myself later," beamed Mrs. Weasley. "You have your drink. We're having a little bit of a celebration, actually."
She gestured at the scarlet banner.
"Fourth prefect in the family," she said fondly, ruffling Ron's hair.
"Prefect, eh?" growled Moody, his normal eye on Ron and his magical eyes swiveling around to gaze into the side of his head.
Harry had the very uncomfortable feeling it was looking at him and moved away towards Sirius and Lupin.
"Well, congratulations," said Moody, still glaring at Ron with his normal eye. "Authority figures always attract trouble, but I suppose Dumbledore thinks you can withstand most major jinxes, or he wouldn't have appointed you."
Ron looked rather startled at this view of the matter, but was saved the trouble of responding by the arrival of his father and eldest brother. Mrs. Weasley was in such a good mood she did not even complain that they had brought Mundungus with them too. He was wearing a long overcoat that seemed oddly lumpy in unlikely places, and declined the offer to remove it and put it with Moody's travelling cloak.
"Well, I think a toast is in order,"
said Mr. Weasley when everyone had a drink. He raised his goblet.
"To Ron and Hermione, the new Gryffindor prefects."
Ron and Hermione beamed as everyone drank to them and then applauded.
"I was never a prefect myself," said Tonks brightly from behind Harry, as everybody moved toward the table to help themselves to food.
Her hair was tomato red and waist length today. She looked like Ginny's oldest sister.
"My head of house said I lacked certain necessary qualities."
"Like what?" said Ginny, who was choosing a baked potato.
"Like the ability to behave myself," said Tonks.
Ginny laughed. Hermione looked as though she did not know whether to smile or not, and compromised by taking an extra large gulp of butterbeer and choking on it.
"What about you, Sirius?" Ginny asked, thumping Hermione on the back.
Sirius, who was right beside Harry, let out his usual bark-like laugh.
"No one would have made me a prefect. I spent too much time in detention with James. Lupin was the good boy. He got the badge."
"I think Dumbledore might have hoped that I would be able to exercise some control over my best friends," said Lupin. "I need scarcely say that I failed dismally." Harry's mood suddenly lifted.
His father had not been a prefect either. All at once the party seemed much more enjoyable. He loaded up his plate, feeling unusually fond of everyone in the room. Ron was rhapsodizing about his new broom to anybody who would listen.
0-70 in 10 seconds, not bad, is it? When you think the Comet 290's only 0-60, and that's with a decent tailwind according to which broomstick?
Hermione was talking very earnestly to Lupin about her view of elf rights.
I mean, it's the same kind of nonsense as werewolf segregation, isn't it? It all stems from this horrible thing wizards have of thinking they're superior to other creatures.
Mrs. Weasley and Bill were having their usual argument about Bill's hair.
Getting really out of hand, and you're so good-looking. It would look much better shorter, wouldn't it, Harry?
Oh, I don't know, said Harry, slightly alarmed at being asked his opinion. He slid away from them in the direction of Fred and George, who were huddled in a corner with Mundungus. Mundungus stopped talking when he saw Harry, but Fred winked and beckoned Harry closer.
It's okay, he told Mundungus. We can trust Harry. He's our financial backer.
Look what Dung's gotten us, said George, holding out his hand to Harry.
It was full of what looked like shriveled black pods. A faint rattling noise was coming from them, even though they were completely stationary.
Venomous tentacular seeds, said George. We need them for the skiving snack boxes, but they're a Class C non-tradable substance, so we've been having a bit of trouble getting hold of them.
10 galleons the lot, then, Dung? Said Fred.
With all the trouble I went to the get 'em, said Mundungus, his saggy bloodshot eyes stretching even wider. I'm sorry, lads, but I'm not taking a canut under 20.
Dung likes his little joke, Fred said to Harry.
Yeah, his best one so far has been 6 sickles for a bag of gnarl quills, said George.
Be careful,
Harry warned them quietly.
What? Said Fred. Mum's busy cooing over Prefect Ron. We're okay.
But Moody could have his eye on you, Harry pointed out. Mundungus looked nervously over his shoulder.
Good point, that,
he grunted.
All right, lads, 10 it is, if you'll take 'em quick.
Cheers, Harry, said Fred delightedly, when Mundungus had emptied his pockets into the twins' outstretched hands and scuttled off toward the food. We'd better get these upstairs.
Harry watched them go, feeling slightly uneasy. It had just occurred to him that Mr. and Mrs. Weasley would want to know how Fred and George were financing their joke shop business when, as was inevitable, they finally found out about it. Giving the twins his Tri-Wizard winnings had seemed a simple thing to do at the time, but what if it led to another family row and a Percy-like estrangement? Would Mrs. Weasley still feel that Harry was as good as her son if she found out he had made it possible for Fred and George to start a career she thought quite unsuitable? Standing where the twins had left him with nothing but a guilty weight in the pit of his stomach for company, Harry caught the sound of his own name. Kingsley Shacklebolt's deep voice was audible, even over the surrounding chatter.
"Why, Dumbledore didn't make Potter a prefect," said Kingsley.
"He'll have had his reasons," replied Lupin.
"But it would have shown confidence in him. It's what I'd have done,"
persisted Kingsley.
"Especially with the Daily Prophet having a go at him every few days."
Harry did not look around. He did not want Lupin or Kingsley to know he had heard. He followed Mundungus back toward the table, though not remotely hungry. His pleasure in the party had evaporated as quickly as it had come. He wished he were upstairs in bed. Mad-Eye Moody was sniffing at a chicken leg with what remained of his nose. Evidently he could not detect any trace of poison, because he then tore a strip off it with his teeth.
"The handle's made of Spanish oak with anti-jinx varnish and inbuilt vibration control,"
Ron was saying to Tonks. Mrs. Weasley yawned widely.
"Well, I think I'll sort out that boggart before I turn in. Arthur, I don't want this lot up too late, all right? Night, Harry, dear."
She left the kitchen. Harry set down his plate and wondered whether he could follow her without attracting attention.
"You all right, Potter?"
grunted Moody.
"Yeah, fine," lied Harry.
Moody took a swig from his hip flask, his electric blue eyes staring sideways at Harry.
"Come here, I've got something that might interest you," he said.
From an inner pocket of his robes, Moody pulled a very tattered old wizarding photograph.
"Original Order of the Phoenix," growled Moody. "Found it last night when I was looking for my spare invisibility cloak. Seeing as Podmore hasn't had the manners to return my best one, thought people might like to see it."
Harry took the photograph. A small crowd of people, some waving at him, others lifting their glasses, looked back up at him.
"There's me," said Moody unnecessarily, pointing at himself.
The Moody in the picture was unmistakable, though his hair was slightly less grey and his nose was intact.
"And there's Dumbledore beside me. Daedalus Diggle on the other side. That's Marlene McKinnon. She was killed 2 weeks after this was taken. They got her whole family. That's Frank and Alice Longbottom."
Harry's stomach, already uncomfortable, clenched as he looked at Alice Longbottom. He knew her round, friendly face very well, even though he had never met her, because she was the image of her son, Neville.
"Poor devils," growled Moody. "Better dead than what happened to them. And that's Emmeline Vance. You've met her. And that there's Lupin, obviously. Benji Fenwick. He copped it too. We only ever found bits of him. Shift aside there," he added, poking the picture,
and the little photographic people edged sideways so that those who were partially obscured could move to the front.
"That's Edgar Bones, brother of Amelia Bones. They got him and his family too. He was a great wizard. Sturgis Podmore. Blimey, he looks young. Caradoc Dearborn vanished 6 months after this. We never found his body. Hagrid, of course, looks exactly the same as ever. Elpheus Doge, you've met him. I'd forgotten he used to wear that stupid hat. Gideon Pruitt, it took 5 Death Eaters to kill him and his brother Fabian. They fought like heroes. Budge along, budge along."
The little people in the photograph jostled among themselves, and those hidden right at the back appeared in the forefront of the picture.
"That's Dumbledore's brother, Aberforth. The only time I ever met him. Strange bloke. That's Dorcas Meadows. Voldemort killed her personally. Sirius, when he still had short hair. And, there you go, thought that would interest you."
Harry's heart turned over. His mother and father were beaming up at him, sitting on either side of a small, watery-eyed man Harry recognized at once as Wormtail. He was the one who had betrayed their whereabouts to Voldemort, and so helped bring about their deaths.
"Hey?"
said Moody. Harry looked up into Moody's heavily scarred and pitted face. Evidently, Moody was under the impression he had just given Harry a bit of a treat.
"Yeah," said Harry, attempting to grin again. Listen, I've just remembered that I haven't packed my..."
He was spared the trouble of inventing an object he had not packed. Sirius had just said,
"What's that you've got there, Mad-Eye?"
And Moody had turned toward him. Harry crossed the kitchen, slipped through the door, and up the stairs before anyone could call him back. He did not know why he had received such a shock. He had seen his parents' pictures before, after all, and he had met Wormtail, but to have them sprung on him like that when he was least expecting it, no one would like that, he thought angrily. And then, to see them surrounded by all those other happy faces, Benji Fenwick, who had been found in bits, and Gideon Pruitt, who had died like a hero, and the Longbottoms, who had been tortured into madness, all waving happily out of the photograph forevermore, not knowing that they were doomed. Well, Moody might find that interesting. He, Harry, found it disturbing. Harry tiptoed up the stairs in the hall, past the stuffed elf heads, glad to be on his own again. But as he approached the first landing, he heard noises. Someone was sobbing in the drawing room. "Hello?" Harry said. There was no answer, but the sobbing continued. He climbed the remaining stairs 2 at a time, walked across the landing, and opened the drawing room door. Someone was cowering against the dark wall, her wand in her hand, her whole body shaking with sobs. Sprawled on the dusty old carpet in a patch of moonlight, clearly dead, was Ron. All the air seemed to vanish from Harry's lungs. He felt as though he were falling through the floor. His brain turned icy cold. Ron? Dead? No. It couldn't be. But wait a moment. It couldn't be. Ron was downstairs.
Mrs. Weasley?
Harry croaked.
Ridiculous!
Mrs. Weasley sobbed, pointing her shaking wand at Ron's body.
Crack!
Ron's body turned into bills, spread-eagled on his back, his eyes wide open and empty. Mrs. Weasley sobbed harder than ever.
Ridiculous!
She sobbed again.
Crack!
Mr. Weasley's body replaced bills, his glasses askew, a trickle of blood running down his face.
No!
Mrs. Weasley moaned.
No! Ridiculous! Ridiculous! Ridiculous!
Crack!
Dead twins.
Crack!
Dead Percy.
Crack!
Dead Harry.
Mrs. Weasley, just get out of here!
Shouted Harry, staring down at his own dead body on the floor.
Let someone else!
What's going on? Lupin had come running into the room closely followed by Sirius, with Moody stumping along behind them. Lupin looked from Mrs. Weasley to the dead Harry on the floor and seemed to understand in an instant. Pulling out his own wand, he said very firmly and clearly,
Ridiculous!
Harry's body vanished. A silvery orb hung in the air over the spot where it had lain. Lupin waved his wand once more, and the orb vanished in a puff of smoke.
Oh,
gulped Mrs. Weasley, and she broke into a storm of crying, her face in her hands.
Molly, said Lupin bleakly, walking over to her. Molly, don't.
Next second she was sobbing her heart out on Lupin's shoulder.
Molly, it was just a boggart,
he said soothingly, patting her on the head.
Just a stupid boggart.
I see them dead all the time,
Mrs. Weasley moaned into his shoulder.
All the time I dream about it.
Sirius was staring at the patch of carpet where the boggart, pretending to be Harry's body, had lain. Moody was looking at Harry, who avoided his gaze. He had a funny feeling Moody's magical eye had followed him all the way out of the kitchen.
Don't tell Arthur,
Mrs. Weasley was gulping now, mopping her eyes frantically with her cuffs.
I don't want him to know. Being silly.
Lupin handed her a handkerchief, and she blew her nose.
Harry, I'm so sorry. What must you think of me?
She said shakily.
Not even able to get rid of a boggart.
Don't be stupid, said Harry, trying to smile.
I'm just so worried,
she said, tears spilling out of her eyes again.
Half the family's in the order. It'll be a miracle if we all come through this, and Percy's not talking to us. What if something dreadful happens and we never made up? And what's going to happen if Arthur and I get killed? Who's going to look after Ron and Ginny?
Molly, that's enough, said Lupin firmly. This isn't like last time. The Order are better prepared. We've got a head start. We know what Voldemort's up to.
Mrs. Weasley gave a little squeak of fright at the sound of the name.
Oh, Molly, come on. It's about time you got used to hearing it. Look, I can't promise no one's going to get hurt. Nobody can promise that, but we're much better off than we were last time. You weren't in the Order then. You don't understand. Last time we were outnumbered 20-1 by the Death Eaters, and they were picking us off one by one.
Harry thought of the photograph again, of his parents' beaming faces. He knew Moody was still watching him.
Don't worry about Percy, said Sirius abruptly. He'll come round. It's a matter of time before Voldemort moves into the open. Once he does, the whole ministry's going to be begging us to forgive them. And I'm not sure I'll be accepting their apology, he added bitterly.
And as for who's going to look after Ron and Ginny if you and Arthur died, said Lupin, smiling slightly. What do you think we'd do? Let them starve?
Mrs. Weasley smiled tremulously.
Being silly,
she muttered again, mopping her eyes. But Harry, closing his bedroom door behind him some 10 minutes later, could not think Mrs. Weasley silly. He could still see his parents beaming up at him from the tattered old photograph, unaware that their lives, like so many of those around them, were drawing to a close. The image of the Boggart posing as the corpse of each member of Mrs. Weasley's family in turn kept flashing before his eyes. Without warning, the scar on his forehead seared with pain again, and his stomach churned horribly.
"Cut it out,"
he said firmly, rubbing the scar as the pain receded again.
"First sign of madness, talking to your own head,"
said a sly voice from the empty picture on the wall. Harry ignored it. He felt older than he had ever felt in his life, and it seemed extraordinary to him that barely an hour ago he had been worried about a joke shop and who had gotten a prefect's badge. Chapter 10 Luna Lovegood. Harry had a troubled night's sleep. His parents wove in and out of his dreams, never speaking. Mrs. Weasley sobbed over Creature's dead body watched by Ron and Hermione, who were wearing crowns, and yet again Harry found himself walking down a corridor, ending in a locked door. He awoke abruptly with his scar prickling, to find Ron already dressed and talking to him.
"Better hurry up. Mum's going ballistic. She says we're going to miss the train."
There was a lot of commotion in the house. From what he heard as he dressed at top speed, Harry gathered that Fred and George had bewitched their trunks to fly downstairs to save the bother of carrying them, with the result that they had hurtled straight into Ginny and knocked her down two flights of stairs into the hall. Mrs. Black and Mrs. Weasley were both screaming at the top of their voices.
"Could have done her a serious injury, you idiots! Filthy half-breeds, besmirching the house of my fathers!"
Hermione came hurrying into the room looking flustered, just as Harry was putting on his trainers. Hedwig was swaying on her shoulder, and she was carrying a squirming Crookshanks in her arms.
"Mum and Dad just sent Hedwig back."
The owl fluttered obligingly over and perched on top of her cage.
"Are you ready yet?"
"Nearly."
"Ginny all right?" Harry asked, shoving on his glasses.
"Mrs. Weasley's patched her up," said Hermione. "But now Mad-Eye's complaining that we can't leave unless Sturgis Podmore's here. Otherwise the guard will be one short."
"Guard?" said Harry. "We have to go to King's Cross with a guard."
"You have to go to King's Cross with a guard,"
Hermione corrected him.
"Why?" said Harry irritably.
"I thought Voldemort was supposed to be lying low. Or are you telling me he's going to jump out from behind a dustbin to try and do me in?"
"I don't know.
It's just what Mad-Eye says," said Hermione distractedly, looking at her watch.
"But if we don't leave soon, we're definitely going to miss the train."
"Will you lot get down here now, please?" Mrs. Weasley bellowed, and Hermione jumped as though scalded and hurried out of the room.
Harry seized Hedwig, stuffed her unceremoniously into her cage, and set off downstairs after Hermione, dragging his trunk. Mrs. Black's portrait was howling with rage, but nobody was bothering to close the curtains over her. All the noise in the hall was bound to rouse her again anyway.
"Harry, you're to come with me and Tonks,"
shouted Mrs. Weasley over the repeated screeches of
"Mudbloods, scum, creatures of dirt."
"Leave your trunk and your owl. Alastor's going to deal with the luggage."
"Oh, for heaven's sake, Sirius. Dumbledore said no."
A bear-like black dog had appeared at Harry's side as Harry clambered over the various trunks cluttering the hall to get to Mrs. Weasley.
"Oh, honesty,"
said Mrs. Weasley despairingly.
"Well, on your own head be it."
She wrenched open the front door and stepped out into the weak September sunlight. Harry and the dog followed her. The door slammed behind them, and Mrs. Black's screeches were cut off instantly.
"Where's Tonks?"
Harry said, looking around as they went down the stone steps of number 12, which vanished the moment they reached the pavement.
"She's waiting for us just up here,"
said Mrs. Weasley stiffly, averting her eyes from the lolloping black dog beside Harry. An old woman greeted them on the corner. She had tightly curled grey hair and wore a purple hat shaped like a pork pie.
"Butcher, Harry,"
she said, winking.
"Better hurry up, hadn't we, Molly?"
she added, checking her watch.
I know,
moaned Mrs. Weasley, lengthening her stride.
"But Mad-Eye wanted to wait for Sturgis. If only Arthur could have got us cars from the Ministry again. But Fudge wouldn't let him borrow so much as an empty ink bottle these days. How muggles can stand travelling without magic?"
But the great black dog gave a joyful bark and gambolled around them, snapping at pigeons and chasing its own tail. Harry couldn't help laughing. Sirius had been trapped inside for a very long time. Mrs. Weasley pursed her lips in an almost Aunt Petunia-ish way. It took them 20 minutes to reach King's Cross by foot, and nothing more eventful happened during that time than Sirius scaring a couple of cats for Harry's entertainment. Once inside the station, they lingered casually beside the barrier between platforms 9 and 10 until the coast was clear. Then each of them leaned against it in turn and fell easily through onto platform 9 3/4, where the Hogwarts Express stood belching sooty steam over a platform packed with departing students and their families. Harry inhaled the familiar smell and felt his spirits soar. He was really going back.
"I hope the others make it in time," said Mrs. Weasley anxiously, staring behind her at the wrought-iron arch spanning the platform through which new arrivals would come.
"Nice dog, Harry!"
called a tall boy with dreadlocks.
"Thanks, Lee,"
said Harry, grinning, as Sirius wagged his tail frantically.
"Oh, good!" said Mrs. Weasley, sounding relieved. "Here's Alastor with the luggage. Look!"
A porter's cap pulled low over his mismatched eyes, Moody came limping through the archway, pushing a cart full of their trunks.
"All okay,"
he muttered to Mrs. Weasley and Tonks.
"Don't think we were followed."
Seconds later, Mr. Weasley emerged onto the platform with Ron and Hermione. They had almost unloaded Moody's luggage cart when Fred, George, and Ginny turned up with Lupin.
"No trouble?"
growled Moody.
"Nothing," said Lupin.
"I'll still be reporting Sturgis to Dumbledore,"
said Moody.
"That's the second time he's not turned up in a week. Getting as unreliable as Mundungus."
"Well, look after yourselves,"
said Lupin, shaking hands all round. He reached Harry last and gave him a clap on the shoulder.
"You too, Harry. Be careful."
"Yeah, keep your head down and your eyes peeled,"
said Moody, shaking Harry's hand too.
"And don't forget, all of you, careful what you put in writing. If in doubt, don't put it in a letter at all."
"It's been great meeting all of you,"
said Tonks, hugging Hermione and Ginny.
"We'll see you soon, I expect."
A warning whistle sounded. The students still on the platform started hurrying onto the train.
"Quick, quick,"
said Mrs. Weasley distractedly, hugging them at random and catching Harry twice.
"Right, be good. If you've forgotten anything, we'll send it on. Onto the train, now, hurry!"
For one brief moment, the great black dog reared onto its hind legs and placed its front paws on Harry's shoulders. But Mrs. Weasley shoved Harry away toward the train door, hissing,
"For heaven's sake, act more like a dog, Sirius." "See you,"
Harry called out of the open window as the train began to move, while Ron, Hermione, and Ginny waved beside him. The figures of Tonks, Lupin, Moody, and Mr. and Mrs. Weasley shrank rapidly, but the black dog was bounding alongside the window, wagging its tail. Blurred people on the platform were laughing to see it chasing the train, and then they turned the corner, and Sirius was gone.
"He shouldn't have come with us," said Hermione in a worried voice. "Oh, lighten up," said Ron. "He hasn't seen daylight for months, poor bloke."
"Well," said Fred, clapping his hands together, "can't stand around chatting all day. We've got business to discuss with Lee. See you later."
And he and George disappeared down the corridor to the right. The train was gathering still more speed so that the houses outside the window flashed past and they swayed where they stood.
"Shall we go and find a compartment then?"
Harry asked Ron and Hermione. Ron and Hermione exchanged looks.
Said Ron. "We're, well, Ron and I are supposed to go into the prefect carriage,"
Hermione said awkwardly. Ron wasn't looking at Harry. He seemed to have become intensely interested in the fingernails on his left hand.
"Oh," said Harry. "Right. Fine. I don't think we'll have to stay there all journey,"
said Hermione quickly.
"Our letters said we just get instructions from the head boy and girl and then patrol the corridors from time to time."
"Fine," said Harry again. "Well, I might see you later then."
"Yeah, definitely,"
said Ron, casting a shifty, anxious look at Harry.
"It's a pain having to go down there. I'd rather... But we have to. I mean, I'm not enjoying it. I'm not Percy,"
he finished defiantly.
"I know you're not," said Harry, and he grinned.
But as Hermione and Ron dragged their trunks, Crookshanks, and a caged pigwidgeon off toward the engine end of the train, Harry felt an odd sense of loss. He had never travelled on the Hogwarts Express without Ron.
"Come on," Ginny told him. "If we get a move on, we'll be able to save them places."
"Right," said Harry, picking up Hedwig's cage in one hand and the handle of his trunk in the other. They struggled off down the corridor, peering through the glass panel doors into the compartments they passed, which were already full. Harry could not help noticing that a lot of people stared back at him with great interest, and that several of them nudged their neighbours and pointed him out. After he had met this behaviour in 5 consecutive carriages, he remembered that the Daily Prophet had been telling its readers all summer what a lying show-off he was. He wondered dully whether the people now staring and whispering believed the stories. In the very last carriage, they met Neville Longbottom, Harry's fellow fifth-year Gryffindor, his round face shining with the effort of pulling his trunk along and maintaining a one-handed grip on his struggling toad, Trevor.
"Hi, Harry," he panted. "Hi, Ginny. Everywhere's full. I can't find a seat." "What are you talking about?" said Ginny, who had squeezed past Neville to peer into the compartment behind him. "There's room in this one. There's only Loony Lovegood in here."
Neville mumbled something about not wanting to disturb anyone.
"Don't be silly," said Ginny, laughing. "She's all right."
She slid the door open and pulled her trunk inside it. Harry and Neville followed.
"Hi, Luna," said Ginny. "Is it okay if we take these seats?"
The girl beside the window looked up. She had straggly, waist-length, dirty blonde hair, very pale eyebrows, and protuberant eyes that gave her a permanently surprised look. Harry knew at once why Neville had chosen to pass this compartment by. The girl gave off an aura of distinct dottiness. Perhaps it was the fact that she had stuck her wand behind her left ear for safekeeping, or that she had chosen to wear a necklace of butterbeer caps, or that she was reading a magazine upside down. Her eyes ranged over Neville and came to rest on Harry. She nodded.
"Thanks," said Ginny, smiling at her.
Harry and Neville stowed the 3 trunks and Hedwig's cage in the luggage rack and sat down. The girl called Luna watched them over her upside-down magazine, which was called The Quibbler. She did not seem to need to blink as much as normal humans. She stared and stared at Harry, who had taken the seat opposite her and now wished he had not.
"Had a good summer, Luna?" Ginny asked.
"Yes," said Luna dreamily, without taking her eyes off Harry. "Yes. It was quite enjoyable, you know. You're Harry Potter," she added.
"I know I am," said Harry. Neville chuckled. Luna turned her pale eyes upon him instead.
"And I don't know who you are."
"I'm nobody," said Neville hurriedly.
"No, you're not," said Ginny sharply. "Neville Longbottom, Luna Lovegood. Luna's in my year, but in Ravenclaw."
"Wit beyond measure is man's greatest treasure," said Luna in a sing-song voice.
She raised her upside-down magazine high enough to hide her face and fell silent. Harry and Neville looked at each other with their eyebrows raised. Ginny suppressed a giggle. The train rattled onward, speeding them out into open country. It was an odd, unsettled sort of day. One moment the carriage was full of sunlight, and the next they were passing beneath ominously grey clouds.
"Guess what I got for my birthday," said Neville.
"Another remember-all," said Harry, remembering the marble-like device Neville's grandmother had sent him in an effort to improve his abysmal memory.
"No," said Neville. "I could do with one, though. I lost the old one ages ago. No, look at this."
He dug the hand that was not keeping a firm grip on Trevor into his school bag, and after a little bit of rummaging, pulled out what appeared to be a small grey cactus in a pot, except that it was covered with what looked like boils rather than spines.
"Mimbulus Mimbletonia," he said proudly.
Harry stared at the thing. It was pulsating slightly, giving it the rather sinister look of some diseased internal organ.
"It's really, really rare," said Neville, beaming. "I don't know if there's one in the greenhouse at Hogwarts, even. I can't wait to show it to Professor Sprout. My great-uncle Algie got it for me in Assyria. I'm going to see if I can breed from it."
Harry knew that Neville's favourite subject was herbology, but for the life of him he could not see what he would want with this stunted little plant.
"Does it, do anything?" he asked.
"Loads of stuff," said Neville proudly. "It's got an amazing defensive mechanism. Hold Trevor for me."
He dumped the toad into Harry's lap and took a quill from his school bag. Luna Lovegood's popping eyes appeared over the top of her upside-down magazine again, watching what Neville was doing. Neville held the Mimbulus Mimbletonia up to his eyes, his tongue between his teeth, chose his spot, and gave the plant a sharp prod with the tip of his quill. Liquid squirted from every boil on the plant, thick, stinking, dark green jets of it. They hit the ceiling, the windows, and spattered Luna Lovegood's magazine. Ginny, who had flung her arms up in front of her face just in time, merely looked as though she was wearing a slimy green hat. But Harry, whose hands had been busy preventing the escape of Trevor, received a face full. It smelled like rancid manure. Neville, whose face and torso were also drenched, shook his head to get the worst out of his eyes.
Sorry, he gasped. I haven't tried that before. Didn't realize it would be quite so... Don't worry, though. Stink sap's not poisonous,
he added nervously, as Harry spat a mouthful onto the floor. At that precise moment, the door of their compartment slid open.
Oh, hello, Harry, said a nervous voice. Bad time?
Harry wiped the lenses of his glasses with his Trevor-free hand. A very pretty girl with long, shiny black hair was standing in the doorway, smiling at him. Cho Chang, the seeker on the Ravenclaw Quidditch team.
Oh, hi, said Harry blankly. Said Cho. Well, just thought I'd say hello. Bye then.
She closed the door again, rather pink in the face, and departed. Harry slumped back in his seat and groaned. He would have liked Cho to discover him sitting with a group of very cool people laughing their heads off at a joke he had just told. He would not have chosen to be sitting with Neville and Looney Lovegood clutching a toad and dripping in stink sap.
Never mind, said Ginny bracingly. Look, we can get rid of all this easily.
She pulled out her wand.
Scourgify!
The stink sap vanished.
Sorry, said Neville again in a small voice.
Ron and Hermione did not turn up for nearly an hour, by which time the food trolley had already gone by. Harry, Ginny and Neville had finished their pumpkin pasties and were busy swapping chocolate frog cards when the compartment door slid open and they walked in, accompanied by Crookshanks and a shrilly, hooting pigwidgeon in his cage.
I'm starving, said Ron, stowing pigwidgeon next to Hedwig, grabbing a chocolate frog from Harry and throwing himself into the seat next to him.
He ripped open the wrapper, bit off the frog's head, and leaned back with his eyes closed as though he had had a very exhausting morning.
Well, there are 2 fifth-year prefects from each house, said Hermione, looking thoroughly disgruntled as she took her seat. Boy and girl from each.
And guess who's a Slytherin prefect, said Ron, still with his eyes closed.
Malfoy, replied Harry at once, his worst fear confirmed.
Course, said Ron bitterly, stuffing the rest of the frog into his mouth and taking another.
And that complete cow, Pansy Parkinson, said Hermione viciously. How she got to be a prefect when she's thicker than a concussed troll?
Who's Hufflepuff? Harry asked.
Ernie Macmillan and Hannah Abbott, said Ron thickly.
And Anthony Goldstein and Padma Patil for Ravenclaw, said Hermione.
You went to the Yule Ball with Padma Patil, said a vague voice.
Everyone turned to look at Luna Lovegood, who was gazing unblinkingly at Ron over the top of the Quibbler. He swallowed his mouthful of frog.
Yeah, I know I did,
he said, looking mildly surprised.
She didn't enjoy it very much, Luna informed him. She doesn't think you treated her very well, because you wouldn't dance with her. I don't think I'd have minded, she added thoughtfully. I don't like dancing very much.
She retreated behind the Quibbler again. Ron stared at the cover with his mouth hanging open for a few seconds, then looked around at Ginny for some kind of explanation. But Ginny had stuffed her knuckles in her mouth to stop herself giggling. Ron shook his head, bemused, then checked his watch.
We're supposed to patrol the corridors every so often, he told Harry and Neville. And we can give out punishments if people are misbehaving. I can't wait to get Crabbe and Goyle for something.
You're not supposed to abuse your position, Ron, said Hermione sharply.
Yeah, right, because Malfoy won't abuse it at all, said Ron sarcastically.
So you're going to descend to his level?
No, I'm just going to make sure I get his mates before he gets mine.
For heaven's sake, Ron.
I'll make Goyle do lines. It'll kill him. He hates writing, said Ron happily.
He lowered his voice to Goyle's low grunt, and, screwing up his face in a look of pained concentration, mimed writing in midair.
I must not look like a baboon's backside.
Everyone laughed, but nobody laughed harder than Luna Lovegood. She let out a scream of mirth that caused Hedwig to wake up and flap her wings indignantly, and Crookshanks to leap up into the luggage rack hissing. She laughed so hard that her magazine slipped out of her grasp, slid down her legs and onto the floor.
That was funny.
Her prominent eyes swam with tears as she gasped for breath, staring at Ron. Utterly nonplussed, he looked around at the others, who were now laughing at the expression on Ron's face and at the ludicrously prolonged laughter of Luna Lovegood, who was rocking backward and forward, clutching her sides.
"Are you taking the mickey?" said Ron, frowning at her.
"Baboons, backside," she choked, holding her ribs.
Everyone else was watching Luna laughing. But Harry, glancing at the magazine on the floor, noticed something that made him dive for it. Upside down, it had been hard to tell what the picture on the front was, but Harry now realized it was a fairly bad cartoon of Cornelius Fudge. Harry only recognized him because of the lime green bowler hat. One of Fudge's hands was clenched around a bag of gold. The other hand was throttling a goblin. The cartoon was captioned, "How far will Fudge go to gain Gringotts?" Beneath this were listed the titles of other articles inside the magazine. Corruption in the Quidditch League. How the Tornadoes are taking control. Secrets of the Ancient Runes revealed. Sirius Black. Villain or victim?
Can I have a look at this? Harry asked Luna eagerly.
She nodded, still gazing at Ron, breathless with laughter. Harry opened the magazine and scanned the index. Until this moment, he had completely forgotten the magazine Kingsley had handed Mr. Weasley to give to Sirius, but it must have been this edition of The Quibbler. He found the page and turned excitedly to the article. This, too, was illustrated by a rather bad cartoon. In fact, Harry would not have known it was supposed to be Sirius if it hadn't been captioned. Sirius was standing on a pile of human bones with his wand out. The headline on the article read, "Sirius, black as he's painted, notorious mass murderer or innocent singing sensation." Harry had to read this sentence several times before he was convinced that he had not misunderstood it. Since when has Sirius been a singing sensation? For 14 years, Sirius Black has been believed guilty of the mass murder of 12 innocent muggles and one wizard. Black's audacious escape from Azkaban 2 years ago has led to the widest manhunt ever conducted by the Ministry of Magic. None of us has ever questioned that he deserves to be recaptured and handed back to the Dementors. But does he? Startling new evidence has recently come to light that Sirius Black may not have committed the crimes for which he was sent to Azkaban. In fact, says Doris Perkis of 18 Acanthea Way, Little Norton, Black may not even have been present at the killings. What people don't realize is that Sirius Black is a false name, says Mrs. Perkis. The man people believe to be Sirius Black is actually Stubby Boardman, lead singer of popular singing group The Hobgoblins, who retired from public life after being struck in the ear by a turnip at a concert in Little Norton Church Hall nearly 15 years ago. I recognized him the moment I saw his picture in the paper. Now, Stubby couldn't possibly have committed those crimes, because on the day in question, he happened to be enjoying a romantic candlelit dinner with me. I have written to the Minister of Magic, and am expecting him to give Stubby, alias Sirius, a full pardon any day now. Harry finished reading and stared at the page in disbelief. Perhaps it was a joke, he thought,
Perhaps the magazine often printed spoof items. He flicked back a few pages and found the piece on Fudge. Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, denied that he had any plans to take over the running of the Wizarding Bank Gringotts when he was elected Minister of Magic 5 years ago. Fudge has always insisted that he wants nothing more than to cooperate peacefully with the Guardians of our Gold. But does he? Sources close to the minister have recently disclosed that Fudge's dearest ambition is to seize control of the Goblin Gold supplies and that he will not hesitate to use force if need be. It wouldn't be the first time either, said a ministry insider. Cornelius Goblin Crusher Fudge, that's what his friends call him. If you could hear him when he thinks no one's listening. Oh, he's always talking about the goblins he's had done in. He's had them drowned, he's had them dropped off buildings, he's had them poisoned, he's had them cooked in pies. Harry did not read any further. Fudge might have many faults, but Harry found it extremely hard to imagine him ordering goblins to be cooked in pies. He flicked through the rest of the magazine. Pausing every few pages, he read an accusation that the Tuts Hill Tornadoes were winning the Quidditch League by a combination of blackmail, illegal broom tampering, and torture. An interview with a wizard who claimed to have flown to the moon on a clean sweep 6 and brought back a bag of moon frogs to prove it. And an article on ancient runes, which at least explained why Luna had been reading the Quibbler upside down. According to the magazine, if you turned the runes on their heads, they revealed a spell to make your enemy's ears turn into kumquats. In fact, compared to the rest of the articles in The Quibbler, the suggestion that Sirius might really be the lead singer of the Hobgoblins was quite sensible.
"Anything good in there?" asked Ron as Harry closed the magazine.
"Of course not," said Hermione scathingly, before Harry could answer. "The Quibbler's rubbish. Everyone knows that."
"Excuse me," said Luna.
Her voice had suddenly lost its dreamy quality.
"My father's the editor."
Oh, said Hermione, looking embarrassed. "Well, it's got some interesting... I mean, it's quite..."
"I'll have it back, thank you," said Luna coldly.
And leaning forward, she snatched it out of Harry's hands. Rifling through it to page 57, she turned it resolutely upside down again and disappeared behind it, just as the compartment door opened for the third time. Harry looked around. He had expected this, but that did not make the sight of Draco Malfoy smirking at him from between his cronies Crabbe and Goyle any more enjoyable.
"What?"
he said aggressively, before Malfoy could open his mouth.
"Manners, Potter, or I'll have to give you a detention," drawled Malfoy, whose sleek blonde hair and pointed chin were just like his father's. "You see, I, unlike you, have been made a prefect, which means that I, unlike you, have the power to hand out punishments."
"Yeah," said Harry, "but you, unlike me, are a git, so get out and leave us alone."
Ron, Hermione, Ginny and Neville laughed. Malfoy's lip curled.
"Tell me, how does it feel being second best to Weasley, Potter?" he asked.
"Shut up, Malfoy," said Hermione sharply.
"I seem to have touched a nerve," said Malfoy, smirking. "Well, just watch yourself, Potter, because I'll be dogging your footsteps in case you step out of line."
"Get out," said Hermione, standing up.
Sniggering, Malfoy gave Harry a last malicious look and departed, Crabbe and Goyle lumbering in his wake. Hermione slammed the compartment door behind them and turned to look at Harry, who knew at once that she, like him, had registered what Malfoy had said and been just as unnerved by it.
"Chuck us another frog," said Ron, who had clearly noticed nothing.
Harry could not talk freely in front of Neville and Luna. He exchanged another nervous look with Hermione and then stared out of the window. He had thought Sirius coming with him to the station was a bit of a laugh, but suddenly it seemed reckless, if not downright dangerous. Hermione had been right. Sirius should not have come. What if Mr. Malfoy had noticed the black dog and told Draco? What if he had deduced that the Weasleys, Lupin, Tonks and Moody, knew where Sirius was hiding? Or had Malfoy's use of the word dogging been a coincidence?
The weather remained undecided as they travelled farther and farther north. Rain spattered the windows in a half-hearted way, then the sun put in a feeble appearance before clouds drifted over it once more. When darkness fell and lamps came on inside the carriages, Luna rolled up the quibbler, put it carefully away in her bag, and took to staring at everyone in the compartment instead. Harry was sitting with his forehead pressed against the train window, trying to get a first distant glimpse of Hogwarts, but it was a moonless night and the rain-streaked window was grimy.
"We'd better change," said Hermione at last, and all of them opened their trunks with difficulty and pulled on their school robes.
She and Ron pinned their prefect badges carefully to their chests. Harry saw Ron checking how it looked in the black window. At last the train began to slow down, and they heard the usual racket up and down it as everyone scrambled to get their luggage and pets assembled, ready for departure. Ron and Hermione were supposed to supervise all this. They disappeared from the carriage again, leaving Harry and the others to look after Crookshanks and Pigwidgeon.
"I'll carry that owl, if you like," said Luna to Harry, reaching out for Pigwidgeon as Neville stowed Trevor carefully in an inside pocket.
Thanks, said Harry, handing her the cage and hoisting Hedwig's more securely into his arms. They shuffled out of the compartment, feeling the first sting of the night air on their faces as they joined the crowd in the corridor. Slowly they moved toward the door. Harry could smell the pine trees that lined the path down to the lake. He stepped down onto the platform and looked around, listening for the familiar calls of, "First years over here! First years!" But it did not come. Instead, a quite different voice, a brisk female one, was calling,
"First years, line up over here, please. All first years to me."
A lantern came swinging toward Harry, and by its light, he saw the prominent chin and severe haircut of Professor Grubblyplank, the witch who had taken over Hagrid's care of magical creatures lessons for a while the previous year.
"Where's Hagrid?" he said out loud. "I don't know," said Ginny, "but we'd better get out of the way. We're blocking the door." "Oh, yeah."
Harry and Ginny became separated as they moved off along the platform and out through the station. Jostled by the crowd, Harry squinted through the darkness for a glimpse of Hagrid. He had to be here. Harry had been relying on it. Seeing Hagrid again had been one of the things to which he had been looking forward most. But there was no sign of him at all.
"He can't have left,"
Harry told himself as he shuffled slowly through a narrow doorway onto the road outside with the rest of the crowd. "He's just got a cold, or something." He looked around for Ron or Hermione, wanting to know what they thought about the reappearance of Professor Grubblyplank, but neither of them was anywhere near him, so he allowed himself to be shunted forward onto the dark, rain-washed road outside Hogsmeade Station. Here stood the 100 or so horseless stagecoaches that always took the students above first year up to the castle. Harry glanced quickly at them, turned away to keep a lookout for Ron and Hermione, then did a double take. The coaches were no longer horseless. There were creatures standing between the carriage shafts. If he had had to give them a name, he supposed he would have called them horses, though there was something reptilian about them too. They were completely fleshless, their black coats clinging to their skeletons, of which every bone was visible. Their heads were dragonish, and their pupilless eyes white and staring. Wings sprouted from each wither, vast, black, leathery wings that looked as though they ought to belong to giant bats. Standing still and quiet in the gathering gloom, the creatures looked eerie and sinister. Harry could not understand why the coaches were being pulled by these horrible horses when they were quite capable of moving along by themselves.
"Where's Pig?" said Ron's voice right behind Harry.
"That Luna girl was carrying him," said Harry, turning quickly, eager to consult Ron about Hagrid.
"Where'd you reckon Hagrid is?"
"I don't know," said Ron, sounding worried.
"He'd better be okay."
A short distance away, Draco Malfoy, followed by a small gang of cronies, including Crabbe, Goyle and Pansy Parkinson, was pushing some timid-looking second years out of the way so that they could get a coach to themselves. Seconds later, Hermione emerged, panting from the crowd.
"Malfoy was being absolutely foul to a first year back there. I swear I'm going to report him. He's only had his badge 3 minutes and he's using it to bully people worse than ever. Where's Crookshanks?"
"Ginny's got him," said Harry. "There she is." Ginny had just emerged from the crowd, clutching a squirming Crookshanks.
"Thanks," said Hermione, relieving Ginny of the cat. "Come on, let's get a carriage together before they all fill up."
"I haven't got Pig yet," Ron said, but Hermione was already heading off toward the nearest unoccupied coach. Harry remained behind with Ron.